You are listening to Mike Seminary and Friends.
A number of times I've referenced that I have the great pleasure and honor, frankly, of sitting on the North Dakota Economic Development Foundation Board. And in that capacity, you become real familiar with the landscape of the importance of business in every sector and how it impacts the state of North Dakota and really beyond that footprint. You get to work with incredibly talented people, serve the citizens of North Dakota, the governor and his administration, and you really get to learn a lot. Prior to that, I was involved in economic development on a more local level through chamber work, and again, met a number of very, very talented, smart people. And here's what's important to know about business entrepreneurs, risk takers. Without them, we don't have much. It is people that take risks, start businesses that change our lives for the better. And there's over 30 million, actually 33 million businesses in our country. And with the amount of change that's taking place, I can't imagine how the leaders of those businesses make decisions without people that have great expertise in areas that provide them value. It changes at, breathtaking and neck-breaking speed, probably the speed of light. Well, today I have two people I know fairly well, maybe more because of their reputation, that have incredible backgrounds. Between the two of them, they've worked with companies that have over 56,000 employees in one, 76,000 employees in the other. Both serve the governor in the state of North Dakota, have great entrepreneurial backgrounds, scary smart guys, and really, really, really good people that have started a company called BizBlocks. And BizBlocks is designed to help startups and mature companies in a number of different ways, and that's what we're going to talk about this morning. So welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends, Arnie Strebe and Sean Riley, the co-founders of BizBlocks. It's great to see you. How are you this morning? And I'm going to start with you, Arnie.
Morning.
You're Mike. Great.
Good to see you.
How are you this morning?
Doing very well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Hey, thank you for taking time to join me. And you, Sean, it's great to see you. How are you?
Mike, it's great to be here. Really appreciate you having us on. And, it's sunny and warm in March. How can you complain? It's an awesome time outside, and it's just awesome to be around.
I agree. Well, first of all, you guys are really busy. Thank you so much for taking time from your very busy schedules to join me. I'm going to talk a little bit about your backgrounds, and please fill in any information that I might leave off that's important. I've had the great pleasure of working more directly with Arnie, frankly, on a number of things. At one point in time, I think the titles were, not the titles matter, we were on the board of advisors for the young professionals in Bismarck Mandan. And that's how we met. And from my perspective, we had an immediate relationship that we have so many things in common. And I got to watch you from a distance, Arnie, and your career at the time as the president of a bank. And so for the sake of the folks that are listening today, give us a little bit about your background, because you have, as does Sean, you have a very unique and broad and deep background, by the way, when it comes to business. Thank you for your military service. Give us a little bit of a background, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. I was in the Army briefly for 20 years, around the country, around the world, so to speak. And then I've been in the private sector for about 25 years. And I'll just do the Reader's Digest version. It's kind of, I've been a bank president. I was a chief human resources officer for a bank. I worked with a great group of team members where we made, you know, it was the largest manufacturing plant of its type. We made about 1.4 to 2 million egg rolls a day. I've worked in sales. I've worked in marketing. I was the chief financial officer for the Department of Health and Human Services, which is about a third of the North Dakota state budget at $6 billion. Worked with a great group of team members there. Like I said, worked in sales, worked for international wholesale, retail, e-commerce company. We made 17,000 different products because I was in Richmond, Virginia. So you're right. I know a little bit about a lot. I'm not necessarily the expert, but I've been very fortunate to be given a lot of different opportunities in 6 to 7 different industries. And I'm going to steal Sean's thunder a little bit. It's like, you know, we talk about, you know, when we think about the jobs we had, it's like the EIEIO, and it's like, you know, CEO, president, and so forth and so forth. So, and Sean, I promise not to steal any more of that, your thunder, but that's my background in a nutshell. I was raised by a Nagasaki bomb survivor. My dad was, from Wisconsin, and she always taught me to do the right things the right way at the right time. And that's been my focus, when I was in the service, and it's been my focus outside the service.
Thank you, Arnie. I'll also add that we both share a passion for fitness, taking good care of ourselves. And that's one of the things that I think is a very common bond for us. And Sean, when we met, you were the chief information officer and a cabinet member for the state of North Dakota. And it was through our relationship where you made a presentation for Disrupt Well Technology Summit, Emerging Technologies, where, first of all, I learned just how deep your knowledge is when it comes to technology. But more importantly, you were forecasting the changes that are coming and how important it is for all of us, not just business, to focus on technology. So to that end, Sean, please give a little bit of your background, and then we'll start teeing it up to talk about business BizBlocks and how you guys are collaborating with others. Go ahead, Sean.
Oh, thanks, Mike. So my background is, just like everybody else. I started my first company at 16. I sold that company at 19. I started a whole bunch of other companies, ended up being a partner for Department of Defense, IBM, Mayo Clinic. I was a CEO, CIO, IMO, COO, as Arnie said, all the EIEIOs out there. From everything from one-person startup organizations to multi-billion-dollar shops. And in 2017, I was asked by the governor to come and serve for the state of North Dakota and spent 6 years as a cabinet member. Did all kinds of things that we were told was not possible to do. I like doing things that I'm told is not possible. That's kind of the centerpiece. But when you look at all this, so I've got all these wonderful titles and all these organizations, and the reality is it's all just kind of window dressing. The real core, right, the real story goes back to when I was 16. And when I stand on stage and I tell people the stories, and there's a TED Talk, if somebody wants to go watch the long version, you know, I can give all these amazing titles and all this stuff. None of that matters. The reality is when I was 16, I didn't start a company because I was super smart, super bright, super anything. I started a company because I'm the eldest of 5 kids. I've got 2 younger brothers, 2 younger sisters. My parents were addicted. Very, very complicated growing up. Life growing up really, really sucked, to be honest. And I grew up in this itty-bitty little town in Lanesboro, Minnesota. For anybody that's ever been there, it's 800 people. So very, very North Dakota-esque in that sense. But a little town of 800 people, very, very pretty town. But like I said, growing up sucked. And everybody in the town knew what we were going through, but they didn't really know how to help us. And when I was 14, I gave a speech, and I was in 10th grade. I gave a speech on how to hack the school's network and how to change the grades for students. And it got some attention, and that attention was actually good attention. And it made it so that a couple of folks locally found out that I had some knowledge and skill sets, and they took me under their wing, and they said, well, kid, your parents may be beyond saving, but you and your siblings shouldn't be. And so at the age of 14, they started jamming everything into my very thick skull that I could learn. And I tried to learn everything I could. And by the time I was 16, on my 16th birthday, one of the two gentlemen, the one, his name was Hyatt, Hyatt King, the other is Bob Addicks. And Bob pointed a piece of paper at me and he said, so what are you going to call your company, kid? And I had no idea. I came up with the dumbest name that I could possibly come up with, which was Toadstool Computers. That was my first company. And we came up with that name because in Lanesboro, the only real business at the time was the DNR that grew mushrooms. And so that was their big thing. So Toadstool seemed appropriate. And anyway, so started my career in technology. And I have been getting deeper and deeper into technology ever since. And it's allowed me to come out of this environment that I grew up in to grow and think about things that are much, much different than what you would typically think of as a young entrepreneur. So I very admittedly, in my teenage years and my early 20s, I was not a fun person to be around. I was kind of a raving ass, if I can say that on your show. I was not a wonderful person. I was very, very, very competitive, over the top, trying to deal with the things that I had dealt with as a kid and not doing it horribly well. But because of these individuals, Hyatt and Bob, because of other people who took it upon themselves to help me, I started figuring out that instead of trying to conquer the world, I should start to try to figure out how I can help the world. And we started reforming our companies and started reforming the mission of the organizations and the teams and my personal mission and all that. And for years and years, took time to figure out how to do this, but became ultimately what is BizBlock's vision statement of how might we help others succeed, and became this concept of, it's not about me, it's not about us, it's about everyone, and it's how can we help others succeed. And we work through a lot of missions through those type of things, and Arnie's absolutely core to that. He sees that same vision, and Arnie brings his own mission statement to this as well, of doing the right thing the right way in the right time, and bringing those together really creates this collaboration of intensive capabilities. So with Arnie's credentials blow mine away. I have lots of cool titles and stuff, but Arnie like blows me away on credentials. And then we start adding all these other people that we have in a team that it's kind of fun to walk in the room and go, hey, cool, everybody else is smarter than me, and that's awesome. But we've created this mission and vision that enables and empowers, and now that's what BizBlock does, is we take ourselves forward and we help other organizations determine kind of where their passions are and where they can make a difference and how they can impact and how they can do great things. And as we help them go forward, everybody makes some money out of the deal, but at the same time, at the end of the day, we make a real difference with real people doing real things.
Sean, thank you. Arnie, I'm going to ask you a question in a second, but Sean, I have to ask you, how far is Rolling Stone, Minnesota, from where you grew up?
A long ways.
It is?
yep. Yeah, okay. Lanesboro is down right in the little itty-bitty corner of where I'm about 45 minutes away from Iowa and about an hour away from the Wisconsin border. So
gotcha.
Completely opposite little corner there.
For some reason, I thought it was closer. Arnie, when we met, again, it was the board of advisors, whatever it was, for young professionals. I noticed immediately some things about you that drew me into wanting to know you better. First of all, you're a great listener. You ask great questions, but you have this profound caring of others and want to make sure that the best path forward is available to them to succeed. And you demonstrated that in a very soft, subtle way. Where did you develop that skill set, number one, and where did the heart that you have, where did you develop that? Because that's a unique combination, in my opinion.
Thank you, Mike. I can remember vividly when I was in the third grade living in Tucson, Arizona. My dad was in Vietnam, and I'll never forget, my favorite teacher was Mrs. Ward. You know, she was very nice, very professional, but Arnie always had a problem about talking, and then Arnie always ended up in the corner. And so one day I got home, and my mom was outside the door, and I was out there playing football in our yard. And whenever I was in trouble, my mom would start talking to me in Japanese. And she said, "Arno-san, kokowa arei kudasai," which means come on over here. And she said, "Guess who called me today?" And she said, I don't know. You know, I mean, I kind of knew probably, but I don't know. She says, "Well, Mrs. Ward from the school called and said that you were talking and she had to put you in the corner." I was like, "Oh, yeah." And she really, what she said was, you know, "Arnold, you learn more by listening than talking." And I learned that in the third grade. I probably didn't perfect that until maybe the last 10 years. So from the third grade until maybe 10 years ago, I was, you know, a fail, right? Which is, what does fail stand for? First attempt in learning. You know, I just heard that today at the 1 Million Cups, but that's where that came from. I think the other thing was also founded based on respect. You know, and I, on occasion, I do interrupt people and I'm not the best listener. However, I'm really focused on listening to what others say, because I have I've been very fortunate to learn from so many different people that when they talk, I can put the pieces of the puzzle together. And the only way you can put the pieces of the puzzle together is if you're a good listener. If you're doing all the talking, you don't have the time to take in all the information that's being discussed. It's one of those things where in my past leadership positions, people say, like, "Well, why don't you talk more on it?" Well, you know, if you have 10 really smart people and 10 people that are in marketing or sales or research and development or QA and QC, you listen to them. And when you listen to them, you learn, right? So for me, it was back to the third grade when my mom called me out and we got home saying, "Hey, you know, Arnold, son, you learn more by listening than talking." And so it's kind of stuck with me ever since then. Matter of fact, I have a little sticky on my computer. It says, "Why am I talking?" And then the other one, the other yellow sticky says, "Ask more questions," right? And you learn more by asking questions instead of talking. So that's kind of where that's where that was developed. And it was also, as you gather all that information, be very intent, you know, and assume positive intent to something that Sean and I talk a lot about. And he and I really get along well because where he's strong, I may not be as strong, and vice versa. But that's where I learned to be a good listener. And I still struggle with that on occasion. And when I'm on my game, so to speak, I feel very good sitting back and listening to others and learning.
Let's start kind of peeling the onion of BizBlocks. And folks, by the way, it's BizBlox. And it's bizblocks.com. They're also on X, formerly Twitter, and LinkedIn. I'm going to tee up the first question this way, and I'll go to you, Sean. You have, you know, your vision question is, how might we help others succeed? And then you have these blue sky goals that deal with start, run, grow, and transform. And here's how I'm going to tee up my first question. When I had, actually it was my second business, and I was in a partnership with somebody, started it in late 81, and I sold my interest in late 83, early 84. We had a computer at that time. And it was one of those big old, I can't even remember what it was, but it looked like something out of a Star Trek movie. We really just used it for storing names and running labels. That's what we used that computer for, and sending out information to our customers. Well, things have changed a little bit. So my first question is, with how might we help others succeed? When someone comes to you, Sean, or you meet someone, what's the process like to help to determine the best way for you to help them succeed? How do you start?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So to start, we have to be very, very curious, right? So our teams have to enable a growth mindset. They have to be very curious. And we sit down with whatever organization is coming to us, and we start with a series of questions. And the first group of questions are very, very simple. And it's 12 questions. It's two questions in six different categories. The first category is product. The next is team. The next is their financials, then their market, then their technology, then their needs. And where we go into is we've also, if you know your product, if you understand your product, then you can have a viable business. If you don't know what your product is, then that needs to be understood, right? Just point blank, right out of the gate. Then what is the team that supports that? How does that team work? Are they qualified? Do they have the capabilities? What knowledge sets do they have, and what knowledge sets do they lack? Every team, especially in small organizations, you have these amazingly brilliant designers and architects and artists and developers, but they tend to not have a lot of depth in business itself. So we have to go through the team and understand it. Financials, right? If you can't be financially viable, you're not going to be doing this long. We have to go through that. Your market space. Who's your competition? How are you competing? What market space are you going to sit in? Your technology. Now, this is one where people might look at me and go, well, I'm not a technology company. And I will say, yes, you are. I don't care what your industry is today. It doesn't matter if you're agriculture, healthcare, energy, aerospace, automotive, anything. Pick it. Whatever you're doing today, you're either a technology company or you are being disrupted by one. End of story, right? No one expected hotels to be completely disrupted by this little cool app called Airbnb, right? Nobody expected taxi companies to be massively disrupted by another cool little app called Uber and then Lyft, et cetera, right? And nowadays we have item after item, thing after thing after thing after thing after thing being disrupted by technology. And even agriculture, right? Today you've got a John Deere 770S that drives itself around. The combine drives itself around your field, right? Picks up amazing amounts of data about everything you're doing. Every single bushel of corn, every bushel of beans that's coming off the ground has ratings in that combine, and it's determining the moistures, and it's determining weights, and it's determining what your yields were per bushel, per acre, per everything. All that kind of stuff, it's all technology today. So we still have to focus there. And then we have to get in that sixth bucket is about the needs of the organization. We start with this. This component is where we start, this discovery, right? And it's 12 questions, very, very simple questions. Everybody should be able to answer, but about 30% of companies haven't thought their way through yet, so they can't answer. If they can, then we move into the next level, and that's called our assessment. We've gone from discovery to assessment. In assessment, we get on videos. We have team members all over the country. And the main person who does this, her name is Michelle. She is based out of Columbia, Maryland, and she helps us do this. And her teams are all over. Some are in Houston, many in Minnesota, North Dakota, all over the country, et cetera. And they jump on videos and they sit with the customers, with the client, with the company, and have a conversation that can be anywhere from 8 hours to 20 hours long. But asking very, very in-depth questions about your product and your team and your financials, your market, your technology, and your needs. And where we then go is we understand your organization in a vastly deeper way so that we can turn to you and say, this is how we might be able to help you succeed. And maybe that's operations help. Maybe it's technology help. Maybe it's financial help, all those different aspects. But we tie all those things together so that that company then gets what they need to win. Is for our purposes, we need you to win, right? This is not the, you know, drop $1 million in, come back, get our $1 million back. Well, oh, by the way, we need 51% of company. Oh, by the way, we're going to kick out the entrepreneur. We don't do any of that stuff. What we do is we come in and go, our win is your win. If you win, we succeed, right? If you fail, we fail. And that's how we're structured as an organization to work through with folks.
Thanks for going through that. And the reason I opened up my question to you with the computer that we had back in the early 80s was if we looked for a consultant, and we did, my partner and I, the kind of research we had to do, you either went to the library or you called someone you knew that was in the same industry, or you read trades. That's how you would find someone. And then we had to fly that person in, by the way. No one was, I shouldn't say it that way, no one I knew was using a computer much differently than the way we were, other than to store data and then pull it out sometime, because there wasn't the internet. It didn't exist. And so clearly things have changed very significantly. So thanks for going through that, Sean. So Arnie, here's my next question. And it'll be a two-part. Of those categories, how do you determine which one is of the most critical importance to address first off? And then secondly, kind of attached to that question, and Sean kind of addressed this, sometimes people don't know exactly what business they're in. They're not really, and for example, Starbucks. When Starbucks started, it was a coffee place. But what it really became was something totally different than that. It was a place to connect and build relationships and socialize. And we have Starbucks and what it is today. So do I have to remind you what those two questions were? I saw you write them down. Are you ready to go?
Okay. Yeah, I was writing them down. So I think I would start off with, and this is going to be probably critical for Sean to jump into when I kind of finish up. I think of the six areas, you know, me being kind of the finance person, I'm going to lean towards the financials. Okay. But at the same time, though, it really comes down to, it depends. Because what we find in some of these organizations is they may have an entrepreneur who's very solid with the financials. But to your point, Mike, they might not be fully aware of their target market. They might not be focused on customer, whether it's focus, segmentation, experience, service, satisfaction, whatever customer word you want to use. Like, we'll talk like the Baldrige criteria, some of the stuff that we use. So we're very, you know, science/research based in what we have pulled together. So the most important thing out of those six areas, it depends. It depends on the entrepreneur. It depends on the business. You know, and Sean brings up a great point in regards to every business that we look at. That's why you see technology there. Every business in today's day and age is a technology company. Whether they believe that or not, they are in some shape or form, right? And then the second question, in regards to folks that, you know, they don't know their business, that's why they hire us. In some cases, they do know their business and they still hire us. It's like one of the things when Sean's talking about, you know, how might we help others succeed? And that's our vision. Our mission is right thing, right way, right time. We've had people push back and say, oh yeah, that's a real nice vision. That's a real nice mission. But we hear that a lot, right? Is it real? And I think what's important is we demonstrate that during the initial conversations. We demonstrate that when we do the discovery, and then we demonstrate that when we do the assessment. It's like Sean says, if the company doesn't succeed, BizBlocks doesn't succeed. And everything that we've done has all been word of mouth. It's based on reputation. It's based on people that are either current customers or people that we work with over the past 25 plus years in business have referred. And we're just beginning to do our social media work. I think those are the two things most critical. It depends. But I have a slight lean towards the financials, obviously. And then they don't know the part about their business is what we also see is when an entrepreneur receives funding, it's amazing. And not to pick on entrepreneurs, but it's like in some cases we see where now they've become the expert. Where when they didn't have the funding and they weren't necessarily validated by the reception or receiving funding, when they get that money, in some cases, and probably more so than that, the behavior of that entrepreneur changes, right? So then we as a BizBlocks need to adjust to that particular entrepreneur receiving that funding. I think that's probably one of the things that probably the most challenging that we have is when we're talking to folks, they have no funding. I won't say it's easy to work with, but the challenges is probably less. But as soon as they receive the funding, It's like instant validation of, yes, I have been validated by someone who has given me funds to invest in my business. So I don't know, Sean, if you want to add anything about the most critical, you know, I like that I kind of lean towards the finance side, but I know that we do need to look at that holistically.
Yeah, and Arnie's absolutely right. It depends. It also depends kind of when you're talking, right? So what is the most critical day one? It kind of needs to be your product. Your product has to exist for you to have a company, right? But day five, it could be your team, because who is going to actually help you to get that product into the world? Day 15, it could be your market, right? Day 35, it's going to be your financials. Now, I mean, Arnie's absolutely right. At some point, financials will become the most important. There's this question, though, of is where are you in the process? So it does depend on where you are in your process. And the process that we run through, so it's called pre-start, start, run, grow, transform. And as you go through your organization, you are always going through this model. And this is not a BizBlocks model. This is a worldwide long-term model that very, very large organizations have used, and I've used in every enterprise that I've worked with. But where you're working through this model, you are in a different phase at different times. And you will change phases based on the work that you're launching. An organization needs to know where they are. They need to evaluate it. And one of the biggest problems you end up with is, say, a company that's been around for, say, 30 years plus. One of the biggest problems they have is they have way, way, way too much run work and not nearly enough grow and transform work. So they're putting their work in operations that is not bringing new value. And we want to be able to help them take that run work and push that run number down so that they can add value into grow and transform. Grow creates new market spaces. Grow is taking your product into new places. And maybe I want to expand to Canada. Maybe I want to expand to Europe. Maybe I want to expand to India, right? Maybe it's, hey, I've got the exact same product and all of a sudden I found a new use for it. I used to be able to use it purely on the field somewhere, but now it's like, wow, I can actually put this into grocery stores and restaurants. You know, that's a grow aspect. Those type of things we help people to move through. There's also this component of transform. So today, technology is continuously disrupting. So if Mike, you want to bring us back next week and talk about artificial intelligence, right? We can come back in another session and talk AI. And then 2 weeks later, we can have a totally another session on AI, because everything we said 2 weeks before is that old and it doesn't matter anymore. That's how fast this stuff is moving. And in today, whether it's artificial intelligence, whether it's quantum computing, whether it's 3D printing modeling, whether it's all of these different architectures that are coming in across the world, or maybe it's cybersecurity, which is hugely, hugely important underneath everything everywhere today. All of those aspects have to be continuously reevaluated as your organization grows. So it just as Arnie said, it kind of depends, right? Of where you are, what phase you're in, and how your organization is moving. That's part of what we do as we help push organizations forward.
Interesting. Yeah, Mike, go ahead, Arnie.
Yeah, Mike, I wanted to add in, and Sean brings up a great point. It's like when we go through what we call the stage gate development process. We have ideation, we have prototype, we have feasibility, we have marketing, pre-launch, launch, and now it's in the marketplace, right? And that's not our process. There are many different versions of stage gate development. One of the most critical things is when people come to us with an idea and they're looking for funding, we have people that have ideas that are scratched on a napkin. We have people that have CAD drawings. We have, but there isn't a prototype. And so there's no proof of concept. It's difficult to go and secure funding in that particular situation. So, and that's why when Sean brought it up, it's great. It's like during the actual going from ideation to prototype to actually having a prototype into feasibility, once feasibility is proven, it's easy to secure funding. It's now working with entrepreneurs who don't understand that concept. They think that if I have an idea, someone's going to give me $1 million. Give me $1 million and I'll figure the rest of it out. And that's one thing that kind of pops up on the radar screen. But it really is in order, and we help folks in the ideation phase. We help them, we've got a company right now where we're working with four different companies and helping them design a prototype so they can get to proof of concept feasibility and then secure additional funding. So, you know, that's why it depends on, to Sean's point, it depends on where the company is. Now, if they've already got a product up and running, then what we do is we come in and take a look at, okay, have they fully identified the target market? Have they fully, you know, utilized all of their resources to increase their business or grow their business? You know, we talk to folks about, are you in the retail business? Are you in the commercial business? Do you want to expand your footprint? Do you want to go global? You know, so it depends on where they are. But for the folks that are out there that listen to this, it's like, if you're an entrepreneur, prototype is so important. And then more importantly, proof of concept that actually your idea actually works.
And before I go to my next question, thank you, Arnie and Sean. Sean, you're talking about, and it was new to me, the venture studio model, right? When you talk about the model that you use. Okay. It's funny you mentioned, I can have you back on. We'll talk about AI. I literally have thought about another podcast with you and then a fellow that I have great respect for. I won't mention him by name, but he's recently been in the news because he made a request to have a 30-day sabbatical because he wants to work on something specifically regarding AI. And I have reached out to him, by the way, so it'd be fun to have the two of you together.
Well, Mike, that gentleman and myself are on stage together next Tuesday as the keynotes up in Minot State. So,
but maybe I should just record that. I'm a bell curve growth guy, and because that's the old model I shouldn't say old. It's still very appropriate, but whether it's a it's maybe not quite as pertinent for a startup. It clearly is for a far more mature company. And this kind of goes back to what you were saying, Sean, with a company that's been around 30 years and they have too much into operations, so on and so forth. When you're working with clients, and I don't know if you use that bell curve of growth, but there are so many companies, and it isn't just in business. It's a lot of life experiences. When we get towards the top of that bell, and if we're not working diligently at making sure we don't get to the right side of that bell, because when you get to the right side of the bell, it's not a pretty sight. You have to find ways to either reinvent or insert something new, dealing with all the changes, whether it's technology or legislation and policy and regulation. How do you work with your clients? And don't go into great detail because what they're supposed to do is get a hold of you. How do you work with them to deal with, you know, you're dealing with this bell curve, and if you get on the right side of that, it's going to be hard to reinvent the next bell that you have for long-term growth. How do you address that with your clients? And I'll start with you first, Arnie.
How do we address the bell curve? I think the most important thing that we do, Mike, is presenting a business case in regards to what we're recommending and why. I think that's probably the most important reason to address, as far as, like, you know, getting to them to the point where they can actually grow versus whether they're on the uphill side of the bell curve, and then obviously if they're on the downhill side, we want to prevent that or slow that down. I know one of the things that Sean and I, with our latest research, is we found that venture studios, when they're used, you know, companies are 93% likely to be successful. When they're going the route alone, they're 87% most likely to fail. You know, so one of the things that we do is we talk about, you know, what's the current situation? Do we have all the facts? Do we have all the data? What are the assumptions? So that we can go back and help those companies, you know, if they want to grow, that's one formula. If it's a turnaround situation, that's a completely different approach, right? The six core areas are the same, but we need to figure out, why is that company on the skids? You know, is it because the market is saturated? Is it because their products and services are no longer relevant? And then in some cases, it's an exit from that particular market. So one, it's gathering all the information, making sure that the information is accurate, and then working with the companies that we work with to chart out a new course of action. So like I said, we're pretty structured in our approaches. I know it's like when we think about, the BizBlocks prototype evaluation checklist, right? We actually have a checklist so that when we were doing the prototype for a particular idea, we walk the customer through that. You know, so it's not like Sean and I sit back and go, well, we think you should do this. We think you should do this. We actually do a lot of teaching. We do a lot of advising and we do a lot of coaching. And part of that reinforces what Sean talked about earlier is venture studios. In some cases, we've seen where they'll come in and take 51% of the company and then boot the entrepreneur. We don't do that. Other thing is there are different versions of venture studios. And so we're unlike our competition. You know, normally our stay is anywhere from 5 to 8 years. We're not there permanently. It wasn't our idea. Our focus is to help them succeed, do it the right way, the right thing in the right time, and then exit the organization. That's our approach, which makes us different than the majority of the venture studios that are out there. So a lot of information, but back to assessing the situation, get the facts, just the facts, man, and then go back and help them chart out a new course.
Thanks, Arnie. Sean, I'm going to ask a question that's kind of similar to what I asked Arnie, but this is more specific about taking inventory. When I learned that term from my father. My dad used to say, son, you always have to be taking inventory. And in that case, when he was mentoring me as probably a troubled youth, frankly, maybe I could have been the guy that told people how to hack into the school computer and change his grades, but I just wasn't that smart, Sean. See, he would tell me that it's really important to sit down on a regular basis to take inventory so you can really identify and work on those areas that you have real strength. There are some times you have weaknesses. You can't do a lot about them. So work more on the strengths to kind of overcome those where you have some shortages, right? In this time that we're in, and when I had my second business in the early 80s, you know, you'd sit down and have long-range goals, 5 years, 10 years, and maybe quarterly you'd sit down and really analyze where you're at, but most people did it annually. I think that model has been out the window a long time ago. How do you go about that process now of taking inventory? And how often, and again, don't give out all the details because they have to go to BizBlocks, BizBlocks.com for more information. What are your recommendations nowadays, Sean?
So Mike, as we talk about startups a lot, one of the things that we also work with, we work with very, very large companies as well. Right. So the multi-hundred million dollar, billion dollar, even trillion dollar companies right now are also our customers. And the model that we use applies not only to the startup, but also applies to these very large organizations. And let me get into that a little bit. So there's a model that Clayton Christensen actually put together back in the 1980s, 1990s, wrote a bunch of books about it. Very, very interesting models around the disruption of systems. And when you get into today, a mature organization, somebody who's been around for 15 years, they're doing $100 million plus in revenue a year. Most of the companies we work with in that space are in the billion-dollar organizations plus. Transformational disruption is the hardest possible thing that a mature company can do. They have immense pain around doing this internally. They do not know how to transform themselves into what they need to become. And the problem ends up being over and over and over again is the market's changed. And right now, the market change is almost always due to technology. There are other factors, right? There's geopolitical things that certainly are happening. You know, Russia and Ukraine, that aspect definitely changed a lot of market spaces. There's other components from a financial component. There's aspects of COVID, et cetera, that caused definite changes in markets. But almost all of the massive transformational disruption today is being caused through technology. organizations get very, very invested in their core business and rarely have the ability to reflect on that core business and understand what that core business should become instead. And that is one of the things that we can help work through. So I'll give you an example. A very, very public studied example was a company called SGI in the 1980s, right? So this was Silicon Graphics. They were the first tech company to hit $1 billion. They were this huge, unbelievable organization that everybody looked at and said, they're immense, they're growing, they're huge, they're powerful, and they'll never be stopped. And does anybody even know who they are anymore, right? Silicon Graphics, SGI, is pretty much not in the lexicon of the universe anymore. And the reason is, right, is that when they were going on their upswing, they had these great executives who, from the media, everybody looked at them and said, wow, they're so brilliant. Look how amazing and brilliant they are. And then 4 years later, after the technology curve had changed, their stock starts plummeting and their organization started plumbing. And what did the media do? They looked at the exact same executives and said, oh, wow, what a bunch of idiots. You know, what a bunch of morons. Well, did these people really go from being brilliant to idiots? No. What happened was very simple. It's that they could not disrupt themselves to meet the new technology curve. They couldn't disrupt themselves to meet where they needed to go. And this is happening all over the world right now. Accountancies, financial organizations are going through this in a huge way. Complements of AI, complements of blockchain, right? We're seeing media organizations go through this because of the way in which the internet makes knowledge consumable now. We're seeing all of these different aspects, agriculture, energy, right? Development organizations, university systems that are going through this massive upheaval because the market has changed. And the survivors are the ones that can actually change themselves and go, how do I go through transformative disruption? Most of these organizations, in fact, 99.99999, however many nines, will not be able to do this without external help because they must have external people to look at themselves because they become too knowledgeable and too comfortable in their own system. Looking at what they've had to have to be able to make money in the past, to stay viable in the past, to provide their services in the past. Someone like us has to come in and say, hey, guys, your world's upside down now. Did you know that? And most of them know that it's upside down, but they haven't the slightest idea how to look at it, right? And they need an organization like us to be able to help them think through that. So that's part of this is companies that are growing in that 20, 30, 40, $50 million variety are now feeling this, where if you backed up 20 years, most of those organizations are pretty safe. They had to get really big before they started having that transformational disruption problem. But now companies that are 20, 30, 40, 50 million, which in the grand scheme of things are relatively small companies, they're starting to feel that same issue. So it's not just the big boys anymore. It's everybody. And if you've got a vested interest in a very singular product that's really propelling your business forward, how is it being disrupted next? Who's going to disrupt it next? Where is somebody breaking that for you? And how are you going to have to respond to that? Well, that's part of what we help come in and do with the more mature companies. Startups, they're on the transformation space. They're the disruptors for the most part. They're coming in creating the disruption. But then we're breaking other organizations and we have to help them be able to get forward so that they can continue to be solved and so that they can continue to succeed too.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that annual sales revenue mark. I don't remember if it was, is it Porter, Michael Porter? Is that the guy that from Harvard, business guru? Maybe I'm saying that wrong. But a person I used to work for, have just the greatest respect for him, brilliant guy, visionary. He was a big Porter guy. And